This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3631, from Monday, the 4th of July, 2022. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for June 2022. It is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 117 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is: HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in June 2022.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. And this is community news for June 2022. Joining me this afternoon is...
Hello, it's Dave Morris, Bad Penny turning up again, all that stuff. Good.
Excellent. Excellent. HPR is a community podcast where the shows are contributed by the hosts themselves, a rotating team of volunteer hosts, very much like you if you are new to podcasting or old to podcasting and have been listening to HPR for a while. Why not press record on your device of choice? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your history, how you got to be listening to HPR, and go to the upload page and submit your show. Because, Dave, as you can see from the new host section, we haven't had any new hosts last month.
Indeed not. You'd think they would be clamoring to get on board and do this wonderful thing. But unfortunately, nobody was available in the past month.
Looks very good on a CV, by the way. Podcaster. Spreading the technical knowledge out there, yes. First thing, you know, can I see any of your work online? There you go, your own page on Hacker Public Radio. Lease persons. Anyway, what is HPR? HPR, we've explained, is a community podcast, volunteer, sort of audio bar camp, if you will. And community news is where the two janitors hook down their mops, come out of their the official closet, the janitor closet, and have a quick chat about the shows that have been posted over the last month and discussion of any other news that has happened here at Hacker Public Radio Towers. So we start, Dave, with Battling English. Will this guy stop submitting shows?
Yes, indeed.
This was Dave Morris, confusing homophones, misunderstanding words from other countries, and acorns. This is this one I didn't know, Dave, and I found it very interesting.
It's, if you're into language and stuff, particularly English, I mean, but all languages are quite fascinating in their structure. Then it's a potentially interesting subject. I find it, so I'm sharing it. I hope other people find it so as well.
I did. I remember the word pundit. I'd never heard it before, and in my first year in third level, the first class, one of the lecturers said, "Many pundits say," and I go, "What the frack is a pundit?" I had to look it up. Anyway, good old times.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yes. So we got some comments.
We did.
Shall I start?
You then start, yeah.
You do two, I'll do two.
I'll do two, you do your responses, okay? STACHE _ AF. That would be pronounced, Dave.
Well, I would pronounce STACHE as stash, as in an abbreviation of mustache, but I'm not sure if that's what this person meant. And AF means various things, depending on your where you come from. Your backgrounds and things. You won't go into it.
No, the acorn, that's why we have Urban Dictionary, your friend. By the way, people, if you hear a washing machine in the background, that's something that's wrong with your setup. It has definitely nothing to do with me doing washing here in the background. Yeah. So it's definitely on your side.
I would have put my washing on if I'd known, but there you go.
There you go. The acorn that gets me, the one that always gets me when people use it, is chomping at the bit, as opposed to what it originally was, champing at the bit. While chomping isn't technically incorrect, it's not as descriptive in my book. Windigo says, Eggcorns, I love that the TTS engine pronounced it Icorns to add to the confusion. Smiley face. And you responded?
I responded to the champing chomping thing. Hi, I was taught that the expression used champing, where champ rhymes with ramp in British English, and that it was describing a horse grinding its teeth on the bit in its mouth in frustration. And researching a little, I find champ is specific to livestock, mostly horses, I think, and describes noisy chewing of fodder.
So, yeah, there you go. I did not know that.
That was something I was brought up with because there were a lot of horses around when I was a kid.
Back in the day, that was before the steam engine, David.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. They were pulling steam engines in those days.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Newfangled steam engine, it'll never last.
And I said to Windigo, this shows that the word eggcorn must have originated from some robot with slightly bent TTS. And I went a bit insane and said, the robot in my head says, by the itching of its corn, because I thought it said itch corn, the TTS makes me forlorn. So I'm glad I didn't share that, though.
Yes. Dane, it's a nice voice, but it really does some weird stuff with... it reads out season one, episode one as a word. It does leet speak.
Yes. I don't know how it... Yeah, it's very strange.
So the following day, we had Linux in-laws operating system level virtualization at Martin's Faith, which was a nice rundown, actually, of various different types of virtualization options.
Yeah, there's a lot of gems in here. There's some good links actually. So if you've missed out on the speechy bit, which I tend to do because their levels are a bit odd for my ears. Then the links are great for going and doing further research.
And the word crack, that can get you in trouble if you're not careful. Crack was mighty. Oh, loads of crack. If you want great crack, go to your man.
yeah, very context dependent, I think.
Uh-huh. Anyway, Mechiotronics says, unite Germany and Russia. Russia and Germany will be a powerhouse. To hell with NATO, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya. How many more victims are there going to be while the cowardly evil West goes along with it? Now, some would say that was spam, Dave.
Yeah. It certainly has all the hallmarks.
Yeah, we let it through, though, on the grounds that they did mention Russia and in their thing. Okay, moving on. Do you want to do the next one? Because your washing machine has just gone into the spin cycle.
I was just wondering what was happening on the... Washing machines are amazingly noisy things. I think mine is noisier than yours, actually. But anyway, so we're at 3610, which is a Hooker's show, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's he's talking about DOS wildcards and file attributes, yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. I thought maybe we'd got off track somehow, but no, it's just the washing machine getting in the way.
Just
intrusive washing machine.
Yeah, on your side, obviously.
I'm just very good at doing washing machine impressions. That's what it boils down to. So yeah, I had actually personally forgotten how DOS did its file system and wildcard stuff, which was pretty similar to what a lot of operating systems were doing around that time, because I can remember dealing with, and I won't list them, but one or two, like Burroughs. The Burroughs mainframe had the most dreadful operating system for that sort of stuff. DOS was probably a little bit better in some respect, but they were all fairly awful in those days because didn't have the power to do anything clever, I think. But
it was kind of manageable, you know.
It was usable. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And now if you look at with that knowledge, and you look at like the options that you have in something like LS or whatever, and pages upon pages of different options. Or God forbid that you open type man bash into the console.
not a wise thing to do unless you've got about a week or several weeks.
Yes.
I did use an operating system in the 70s on an ICL system where if you had the right sort of graphics terminally thing, you would type a command at it. And this was the sort of CLI-ish thing. You typed a command and then you sort of went, ooh, I don't know what all the options are. And it would produce this massive sort of web page, except that hadn't been invented yet, of all of these things that you could then scroll up and down and click on and stuff. Which was lovely if you'd never seen the command before, but once you had, then you didn't want that at all. I didn't anyway.
Very quickly, I imagine.
It was an interesting approach anyway, I thought.
So the next day was HBR community news, and there was no comments on that. I was wondering, why was there no comments? And then because we split up the show into three, actually.
We did quite a lot of show last week in pieces.
Indeed. And the day after that, we had Lurking Prion with Who is Evil Steve Part 2. So this is episode 4. And picking up from the last episode, the type of actors. This is actually a very interesting way to look at attack on you. So, very good.
Yep. I certainly found this one interesting in the sort of information it would give people who are not really up to speed with this stuff is excellent, I thought.
Cool. So, man buys cheap... what was that?
Adirondack.
That was the one. I had it in my head. Adirondack chair. An anecdote about buying a cheap lawn chair and trying to get a part replaced. So Windigo says, Adirondack chairs. Funny enough, I grew up in the south end of that word, mountains in New York. I helped to do some IT work for our county's health facility retirement home, which had been a tuberculosis hospital previously. I had no idea the chairs were associated with tuberculosis treatment. It's bizarre that shipping wooden chairs halfway around the world makes economic sense, more economic sense than building them locally. But I commend you on trying to prevent extra waste. Thank you for the episode.
Yeah, good stuff.
And you've got a little bit of a buzz coming in there, Dave.
Have I? Oh.
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, okay. That's because I just leaned forward, maybe. It was it bounced off my shiny head onto the microphone. Anyway, I think I've got background noise just to be on, just to follow that link.
Yeah, the washing machine.
I should maybe not have the washing machine on my desk. I'll move it next time. Yeah, I'll be fine. Anyway, DNT says, re-Adirondack chairs. Yeah, it has to be that somehow it makes economic sense to them, but perhaps only if you don't account for the born by future generations and underpaid Vietnamese workers. Account for that born by a future. Anyway, honestly, if they had mentioned the option would involve around the world shipment, I would have tried either to repair it or make a replacement part myself. But how naive of me to think this was going to play out any different. Thanks for listening and commenting. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, but I was thinking, where is this going? Yeah, I was just as surprised. A very nice show. If there was any doubt about, why is a cheap lawn chair of interest to hackers, it is. It is very much of interest to hackers.
Very much so. Yeah. It's that whole business of what they call it, outsourcing, or some term that they use where they basically take the entire production system and stick it somewhere that's ultra cheap. But then... You get caught in ships being stuck in the Suez Canal and all that sort of fun stuff.
Yeah, geopolitical thingies changing, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you don't have the only supplier of X in the world. Anyway, that's something for another show, Dave.
it's worth just...
You know, we don't talk politics here in the Jamshire.
No.
People can talk politics all they want out in the halls, but
it's worth maybe just waving that little slip of paper in front of anybody who wants to.
Anybody who wants to do a show on that topic. Well, throw it there on the notice board there. Requested show on notice boards. Everything you wanted to know about PEX part deux, the joy of PEX, what it is and how to use it. There's a lovely comment about this later on, so we'll skip over. There's a lovely comment about in episode 3 about this, so we'll skip to that one.
Yep. There's some very, very comprehensive notes there, to say. The title got a little bit out of hand, but because we only have a limited field for that. But yeah, good stuff. And I like all the allusions to certain publications that have a word in that rhymes with PEX.
Yes.
Is that discreet enough?
Yes. The following day, I am a troll and I'm trolling HBR. That's from a Minecraft song. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole, diggy diggy hole, diggy diggy hole. Haven't come across that one though.
Yeah. In the early days of Minecraft, I remember that.
So this was about the Windigo says disappointing. Oh, this is about the fact we got trolled. But okay. Disappointing. I'm disappointed to hear that someone took it upon themselves to deliberately waste the time and resources of the volunteers that keep HBR running. If anything, this episode has highlighted just how upstanding all of you are. Thank you all, janitors and our hosts, for keeping things running. Very welcome. We expect a package to be sent down here at Christmas time into the janitor closet as normal. Round, bottle shit.
So FXB says, a troll is a troll. Ken, Dave, et al. Continue to do a stellar job keeping HPR in good order and making it a shining example of cooperation and information sharing amongst several intersecting communities. I do, however, have to stress there is nothing whatsoever constructive in the motives of whoever submitted the shows in question as the topic of this show. What I'm gathering from this show, and I could be wrong, is the issue making the show submitted problematic, both ethically and potentially even legally for HPR and its volunteer staff. The persons submitting such content are in no way, shape, or form a gadfly, as they appear to have claimed. They're just a troll. The term gadfly used in the intended context is very specific. A gadfly is someone who asks potentially upsetting questions, usually to authorities at their own risk, in the pursuit of that truth. Attempting to put others, i.e. the HPR staff, at risk by using them as a platform to spread what is essentially hate speech, be it in seriousness or just to cause upset, is just trolling. Nothing more, nothing less. Ken and Dave are rightfully careful in how they discuss the situation. I do believe, insofar as HBR show output is concerned, they have taken the right approach. Well done.
Super. And Mechiatronic says, fucking bullshit. The things I posted were matters of opinion for sure. I'm evil and engaged in hate speech to destroy the platform. Okay, man. There was no hate speech in anything I posted, and you know it. So the following day, we had the second part, filling free slots from the reserve queue. You can now submit shows to the reserve queue for free slots that are not filled on time. And this is another thing about the feast and famine. We discussed this last community news as well. Feast and famine nature of the queue, so that if there are free slots, we'll take them from the reserve queue. And the emergency queue would be reserve queue. If there's a free slot, it's not. Why am I saying this? We discussed it last week. Last month. And we actually had one show from Lurking Prion, didn't we? And that made us think, hold on, we're going to do this.
Yeah. It needs another parallel track, effectively, isn't it? Which is desirable, but adds a little bit to the background janitorial work.
Well, the thing is, we put in text-to-speech stuff at the beginning, so we can't really process them. So the easiest thing to do now is just take them from the upload directory and put them into the reserve queue directory and make that kind of available somehow. Dave, this is on the spin cycle. Give me, I just grab a coffee and we let Truncate's silence do its work if you've got 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll probably just end up moving them over. But I was also thinking perhaps we should have like a, I don't know, reserve shot. I still haven't thought fully how to make it obvious in the upload form. Do you just press a button like intro, outro, where you just say this is a reserve show, or that you can go schedule the show anytime you like? Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, given that you start by choosing the slot and to get to the form, you want to be intercepting it earlier on, ideally, but that means writing a different form, presumably.
Yeah, and also what I would like to do is have, say you upload a show and you're uploading in batches, that it would have recommended slots that it would be 2 weeks out or on a week that would be, but we'll see. Let's do the reserve show first.
Yep.
Move on. And the following day, two-factor authentication by Lurking Prion, and there was a comment from S-Off, Google Authenticator. It's probably been a while since you've used Google Authenticator for two-factor authentication, but the app now does allow for transferring between devices. Still don't have a backup option that I've found, but at least now you can move the rotating keys between devices. Also, a recent update obfuscates all the code until they have tapped. So if someone is peeking over the shoulder, they can't see all of the codes, just the one being used.
Okay. Lurking Prion says, Google Authenticator improvements. It's good to see that improvements have been made. I really liked Google Authenticator when it came out. I'm hoping this space will see improvements as the migration to passphrases becomes more ubiquitous. On the flip side, Google doesn't make money off Authenticator. Thank you again for the feedback. It's greatly appreciated.
And some guy on the internet says, I agree. I use many of the tips mentioned in your show. My goal is simple when it comes to security. Avoid being the low-hanging fruit. I disagree with telling others security doesn't exist. We should encourage others to explore the realm of security, then apply as many layers as we feel comfortable slash possible. And yes, I know you've also suggested this point. Great show. Keep them coming.
Lurking Prion says, no security? Question mark. Thank you for the feedback. I struggled with this for a while before deciding to just shatter the myth of security. While I agree in principle that we shouldn't tell people that security doesn't exist, it's always predicated on the basis that we should implement the security controls that we are comfortable with. It's really risk analysis, not security, smiley face.
Yeah, very much so. Risk analysis is what it is. And one of Spoon's, still the greatest to handle on HPR in my opinion, two-factor authentication and OTP. You can back up these time-based one-time password function instances. The program called AND OTP has been ready since 2018 and supports OpenPGP backups, encrypted backups, and database encryption. We'll also show the secret string for transferring to key pass variants, and you can copy and paste the result of the RFC 6238 algorithm from a password manager available on F-Droid and the dreaded Google Play Store. That would be worth a show, one of Spoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's the basis of a show right there.
Well, I didn't get all of that, I have to admit, and so it would be great to have that, to have those facts spelled out somewhat. So, yeah, completely agree.
The NNN Terminal File Manager by Archer72. Let us crack open the show and have a look at it. I actually went to use this the other day and then just ended up not.
Yeah, I've also been using it on odd occasions when I was looking for a file, or looking for a directory, actually, thinking I had one called a certain thing, and I found it was sort of useful, but I couldn't quite see why I would use it myself, because I've just not got into that habit. I used to be into what's it called? the two pane thingy that uses curses and stuff.
Midnight Commander, is it?
Midnight Commander, yeah. I used that all the time for many, many years. Now I tend to use Dolphin a lot of the time. I know it's very gooey, but it's just so damned useful. I find that it does pretty much all I want it to do, except when I try and access my phone, which I tried to do yesterday, over KDE Connect, and it just completely hung. to kill it to come back to life again. But but on the whole, it's fantastic. Dolphin is. So I if I was stuck on a machine that didn't have all this fancy stuff, like on a Raspberry Pi or something, I may well end up using this tool. I've not put myself in that position lately, so next time I do, I will bear that in mind.
I'm distracted now because I've installed it.
It's got some great ideas in it. It seems to be a really well thought out tool. And back in the day, something like that would have been utterly wonderful. You know, in the days of early Unixes and stuff, where it was a hell of a job to find your way around places, especially if you were a newbie in the Unix world, that would have been so nice. But these days, I don't know. Yeah. Doesn't suit me that much.
I'll see. I'll give it a go on. Indeed, one of my Raspberry Pis, my NAS, I'll have a rummage with it. There's one thing that I've been using Aura Find with hard links to reduce disk space, you know. And now I've ended up with three different directories that are merged together, and they're all sharing the same inode. And if you drag the same file over, so like you have directory one, file one. Directory 2, file 1, directory 3, file 1. And they're all inoded. They're all share the same inode, so they're hard linked together. And if you copy from one to the other in anything like Dolphin or whatever, it doesn't allow you to do it because it's the same file.
You know, yes.
It just drives them nuts. So in order to find them, I'm having to find the inodes and then find the duplicates and then deal with them one by one. That's not ideal.
No. The ability to fiddle around with hard links is wonderful, and I've done it for a long time, but you can get yourself into one hell of a knot if you're not careful.
Yeah. Okay, shall we move on?
Okey-doke.
Linux in-laws, Kubernetes, and friends with Sarah. This was actually a nice show. About kubemin and stuff, very, very relevant to what I'm doing in my work.
Yes. It. I was having problems hearing this one because Chris is loud and Martin is quiet, and my ears with tinnitus just do not cope well with that. So the Chris bit drowns the Martin bit, even though they're not happening simultaneously. So, look after your ears, people. Look after your ears, because it's tinnitus is often caused by having background noises, like washing machines, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, more like concerts, Dave, on the front. Yeah. Just so you know.
I worked in a very, very noisy factory for a couple of years, and they gave us ear protection, which was basically sort of cotton wool. It was very high-tech cotton wool in interesting packets, but I don't think it did anything. So I think it's buggered my ears up. So anyway, that's beside the point. I tend to ramble. But the principle of it, again, some brilliant links. So lots of stuff there to go and dig around in and find out more.
Sarah says, hello, great show as always. It would be fun to collaborate one of these days. And yes, lol. I did let my show remain labeled explicit when there was probably no swearing, but I never know what offends folks. I don't consider damn or hell swear words, but many folks do, since I normally swear like a sailor. I thought it better be safe than sorry.
Hey,
good advice.
Yep.
Are you with me?
Yep. Did you forget to press to talk or something just now, or did you have to go away?
No, did you? Where did I leave off?
I did nothing since the show with Linux in-laws 3619. We're now on 3620.
Again, I'm a moron. Apparently, pressing the wrong push to talk key. Photos, storage, backup, and workflow. how to keep your photos safe. This is a show you want to be listening to before the event rather than after it. There are two comments. Some guy on the internet says, great show. Love the show. I have to use a directory structure from my photo management. I'm very paranoid about editing the only copy of an image and then losing the original in the process. GIMP equals scary edit. Thanks again.
yeah, good point.
That's scary. Kevin,
yes. Kevin says, glad I could help. I'm happy to see that my methods are of some use to others. I'm working on some more material for 2023 on photos and editing. I like the way he says that because he's submitted shows all the way through the end of this year and into next, I think.
Yes.
I'm not sure. yeah, it's, he takes a different perspective on HBO shows than most of us do. Long may it continue.
Indeed. So the next day, if you can hear me.
Yes.
Was watching YouTube in 2022. And this was a show by you, actually. Some other channels that I had a little look at. And decided to not have a look at them because I would be downloading loads of stuff. I'll come back to them again.
Yeah. You've got to watch it, you step. I watch a lot of stuff because I'm retired. I don't have too many demands on my time other than, you know, the mop and bucket calling. But I just thought, you know, some people might get some benefit from these. You know how it is, you can go to YouTube regularly and miss things because there's so much.
Yeah.
So giving a few pointers seemed like a good idea.
It's one I've been planning on doing for a while. There are some comments. Mechiatronic says, YouTube is no good anymore. While there are lots of great tech channels, there is no way to get an organic engagement there anymore. The age of viral YouTube videos is dead. And the section will steadily get worse as people use other platforms that value free speech and authenticity. At least link the invidious alts like weewtu.be so you don't give those imperial scum any revenue, comrade.
yeah. Well, you know, whenever you're using some free thingy on the internet, then there's always going to be an agenda which you may or may not see. So I'm not that keen on YouTube as an entity, but I quite like what it conveys or has conveyed in the past. But anyway, second comment by Mechatroniac, Mr. Teslonian. His font is hard to read. Mr. Teslonian is a great tech channel that not too many know about. I didn't realize it was possible to get gasoline from wood until he demonstrated his gasifiers. He also does crazy stuff like building a powered exosuit out of an old wheelchair. Definitely a post-apocalyptic kind of channel. It gives a link to this alternative, yewtu.be. Address. I think we've had somebody talking about gasifying wood on HPR a long time ago. They're talking about wood gasifiers. You can run a truck on them and things like that. I remember hearing about.
More shows than that. Absolutely fine with me.
Indeed.
My network setup. Some guy on the internet. And huge description here based on TP-Link. The client list, server list, how the LANs are set up, resistance network, very good, T100 network, T1000 network, and Skynet network. I see what he's doing there. And very good. Nice approach, very clean. I like it. Very similar to what I do myself, except I don't use VLANs.
Yeah, we had VLANs at work, but I've never seen the need at home, but it's becoming more appropriate as time goes on, I feel.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't get any comments, actually, because I saw somebody contacting him on either Twitter or Mastodon with a complimentary tweet, post, whatever it was. And
Twitter.
yeah, one of those. I thought it was is really good. He's obviously put a lot of effort into planning this out, and his description was great. I found that most entertaining.
And the next day, Lurkin Prion and or Brad Brady Frost and their kids were on discussing security. Quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, it was a good idea to do this, I thought, and to get the sons in to give their viewpoint was also quite revealing. You know, their level of understanding was pretty high, which is what you need, given that both of their fathers were in the business. It's not too surprising, but you know, they've obviously taken those lessons on board, and good for them. Yeah,
so I was amused because one of the guys in work, son, had turned off the firewall on his computer and then had installed something or other, you know, a crack to break something or other, and his computer was absolutely infested with all sorts of stuff. So,
oh, so easy, so easy.
Everything you ever wanted to know about PEX Part 3 and 4. And be easy comments. Unexpected relevance. When this series began, I listened to your episode kindly and patiently, as one would listen to a child or an elderly person, most out of respect for the host. Now I find myself in the middle of a bathroom remodel in a house riddled with pecs, and as you can imagine, my interest has spiked in this topic. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and experience. There you go.
That's a great comment. I like that. It's these shows are great, actually. I'm surprisingly interested in what's basically pipe work. it seems like an amazing material, considering what its ancestors are and stuff, you know. It's good stuff. And I do enjoy the titles and the summaries and stuff. So,
yeah, great choice. I have a hot and cold water going to the shed, actually, and I want to split that off so that I can have a feed going to the garden. So I'm also going to start getting a little bit interested in how to do this. Seems I don't really want to invest huge amounts in a kit, you know, just to cut it.
No,
we'll see.
I thought that there are sort of simple manual devices for cutting it, but
I'll go down to the local shop and ask about it. Not the DIY multi-store, the local hardware shop.
Almost always better. But they did have in our local big box place. They did at one point hire pensioners who often. No, sort of hobbled around a bit, like me, of course. But they often had some good knowledge of stuff, possibly from having done these things in their own houses or having worked in the industry in the past, and now they were working for XYZ Big Box. So I thought that was a good idea. It didn't last, though.
That was a good idea, actually. It's a pity it didn't last. Probably because they were recommending, you know, bleeding copper fittings from days ago.
Possibly. Or they'd say, oh, don't buy stuff here. Go to that guy down the road. He'll buy a much better price. Or whatever.
All righty. Following day, Shell Tips Snippets collaborative effort. Carl and special guests. We're giving away nothing here, Dave. Except it wasn't either of us. But, three great shows, actually, in one. That's my only negative point about this show was could have been three shows.
Yeah. It was good, though. It was a great idea, and it turned out really well. And I didn't find that it was difficult to listen to in any form. So we'll come along mention when we get to the email. Carl seemed to think his audio was awful, but I thought it was perfectly fine, personally.
And DNT said, Shift, thanks for this, Carl. Couldn't imagine a better host. You're exactly the right about the reason to talk about Shift. You see it in scripts out there, and it can be quite hard to glean what it does if you don't already know. I also thank you for your observation about the word Shift, which I actually hadn't noticed. The name of the script was myshifts.sh, so it's impossible to tell if it refers to the repeated running of the shift command or to the resulting calendar events. I like it.
Yeah, that appeals to me, actually. It's a multi-factor word, multi-use word. So Carl says, thanks for the comment and the contribution to the show, DNT. You and Claire to really help me get something out the door. My timing was off as usual, as I should have had my recording process figured out beforehand, but I'll improve it before the next show. The work stroke shift example was perfect. Cool.
Super. So getting close to the end of the month. The stuff Evil Steve doesn't want you to know about. A password manager, yes. I am a big fan of password managers with huge, long, multi-complicated passwords. And then you find your bank requires you to use no more than so many characters and they can't contain anything other than blah, 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 blah.
Just. Yeah, yeah. I've got that one. I actually put it in the notes. I use KeePass X. What is it? XC or something? Yeah, I put it in the notes saying, don't ever make it longer than 19 characters or whatever, and it's got to be this character set. And you, those people really need to be slapped about. But given my son is now one of those people.
Yes, now you have somebody physically to do that.
But he has no
just
control
pass
whatsoever.
Pass it on to the guys at the coffee corner.
He has no control over this at all. But anyway, yeah. So, yes, good stuff. Very good stuff.
Operator, the only key duo, and this is a USB-C security key. Very interesting. I'm interested about these things. That should be in the security series, actually. Now that I look at it, note to self.
Why does it say part of the series colon and then nothing? Has it been given the wrong series number or something? I only just noticed that.
Yeah.
Needs a look. I added Carl's to the Bash scripting series.
Very good.
Just by the way. So it's, and we need to check that one because it should, as you say, be in the security series.
Okay. Mechatronic comes in with a cool episode about building a mobile computer battle station. And there are lots of pictures in the show notes. I would advise anybody following the show to be very careful about welding, soldering onto lithium ion batteries. So could also do with explaining, I would like to hear a show about what BMSs, battery management systems, boost and buck converters, if you want to do a show on that, that would be great. And soldering techniques for soldering onto those lithium ions, because you can, excessive heat apparently will damage them. So a lot of people use spot welding stuff.
Okay, that's interesting. I just watched a Big Clive episode within the past few days where he tends to glean these things by picking up discarded vaping things with a pair of gloves on, I would hope. But anyway, taking the quite good quality batteries out of them and reusing. But he said, I'm not sure if it was from experience, that he had seen a case where soldering to the end of it had triggered the reaction which caused a jet of stuff to squirt at the end of the battery, and which would be flammable. Didn't happen to catch on fire, but you could, burn your house down if you did that sort of stuff in the wrong environment.
In a related YouTube channel, Julian Ilette also goes into those, and he has a series where he built a battery pack using sort of like 3D printed holders that just bolt them together. There's a lot of energy in those things, so but a cool show nonetheless. This is the sort of shows that we like.
Yes, it's a fascinating thing. I wasn't quite sure what a mobile computer battle station was until I'd heard the show and seen what it was. So solar powered external battery thing, but cool, very cool.
So we're still in this month, Linux in-laws, the show where with Red Pandas Mosaic Killers and Metal Corrosion talks to Eric from the CTO of Firefox at Mozilla. And of course, Rust had to come into the conversation.
Considering they've rewritten a lot of stuff in Rust, then it's not entirely surprising, yeah.
So that was it, Dave. For once, I'm not going ahead. We did have a next comment going back to Windigo's show, Barrier Software KVM, and I realized that the word barrier is not part of the tags for that show, which threw me for a loop. And it's from me. Excellent. Thanks. Use this today. A massive improvement on Synergy. There we go.
So takeaway from that is that barrier should be part of the key of the tags for that show, eh?
Yeah, one would have thought, yeah. Yeah. Did I fix that? Not yet. Not yet.
I've got an old Fortran computer card here on the desk, which I just wrote the show number on. As you do, right?
As you do, doesn't everybody? So we've covered all the comments, then it's on to the mail list, am I correct?
That's right.
So, any interest in collaborating on a show on shell snippets by Carl? And as we have just seen, yes, there was. Hi, friends. I'm pleased to report that the minimum number of contribution has been reached, so the show is a go. I plan to edit and post next weekend.
That's cool. And he followed that up with an apology on the 24th of June, quite some time after. Sound quality of my segments in today's show is embarrassing. My apologies to all listeners. I will try to improve before submitting anything else. But he then received lots and lots and lots of comments. I don't know whether we want to read them all out,
yeah.
But saying, no, it's fine, it's great, it's no problem, including mine that said it sounded absolutely fine to me.
Mine as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
James Tobers doing an IOU show.
We haven't heard from him for a long time, no. He does some good stuff. I'd be interested to hear what he has in mind.
Yeah, most people, I'm just horsing through these comments, and most people are saying, yeah, audio was fine. Taj is probably going, it was horrible!
But there were a few offers to help out with any audio issues as well.
Maybe we should go to them just for the crack.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I said I thought it was fine. There are plenty of people who have offered to mentor. Taj has a good series on starting podcasts.
And Carl replies, I'm following these with the thread link in the mail stuff itself, so
okay,
the same direction. Thanks for the encouragement, James, he says to James Tobes. Can I listen to one of Taj's shows after I submitted this one and bought the Samsung Q2U microphone he recommended, because it's always the equipment's fault. I'll go through the rest of the shows on the off chance that the operator might be doing something wrong. So some good resources there for people working this sort of stuff out.
Claudio says, hey Carl, great show on those snippets. I thought everything sounded fine, as others have said, and it was good to get that one episode done. Keep up the good work.
And Taz says, I haven't had a chance to listen to the show yet, but Carl, don't be shy about reaching out about the sound stuff. I'm more than happy to help.
And Dave Lee says, there's a HTML attachment.
He always says that.
And now I have to read HTML. The sound quality... Carl, what does he say?
Shall I read it? I've got it in Thunderbird here.
Oh, no, I've got it here. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. It sounds fine, Carl. Don't worry too much about it. That you can be heard and understood is what matters. I use the Samsung Q2U on my podcast, and I'm really happy with it. I'm sure you will be. And I also throw my hat into the ring of people who are happy to help out with the audio. That goes for anyone. So that's Dave Lee.
Do you want to do your own, or I could do it with your accent?
Bet you couldn't. Hi, Carl. I just listened and thought the show was great. I had no problems with the audio. I applaud the drive towards perfection, but this was just fine to my way of thinking. Nice premise for a show too. Collaboration stuff is always very appealing as far as I'm concerned. I meant to contribute, but...
Yes. And Todd says, I was not bothered at all by the sound quality. It was a great idea and turned into a great show. And Carl says, do you want to do it?
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for the feedback, says Carl. Support and offers of assistance. What an uplifting way to start off the weekend. Please hold any negative comments until Monday. HBR rocks.
Yeah.
He says. Good.
So, policy change from me. I'm opening all the tabs here, so I can horse through the comments. Right, this policy change relates to shows that have been published, but which may contain problematic content. For more information, listen to today's show, where I suggest that we continue to post shows as normal. If we get a complaint, then the janitors will contact the host as normal. Should the host be unavailable, uncooperative, or disagree, then the janitors can either move the show to the backup queue or hide it, depending on the severity of the complaint. In all cases, we will keep the Special Advisory Committee, aka the auditor team of volunteers, in the loop to make sure that all is above board. The community can then decide the best course of action. And a link to HPR episode 3615. I would like to propose the following changes to our policies, and this is related to the page stuffyouneedtoknow.php hashtag not moderated. It says currently, we do not vet, edit, moderate, or in any way censor any of our audio you submit. We trust you to do that. That's that last bit that's changing. Proposed changes, we do not vet, edit, moderate, or in any way censor the audio you submit. We trust you not to upload anything that will harm HPR. And we intend to add the line, any material that is reported as harming HPR may be unlisted until such a time as the situation can be resolved. And Dave Lee said, oh no, X1101 says, Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to find it in Thunderbird. I upgraded Thunderbird since last time, and I'm having very slight difficulties with it. Hold on a sec.
I'll do the next one. I emphatically approve. It makes it clear what the intention is, self-preservation, not moderation, and what the response will be.
Kevin O'Brien says, I'm okay with this. I don't think he said it quite like that, but I probably said I'm okay with this.
Claudia says, I also approve of this change.
Plus one from me, good call, and don't feed the trolls, is what Mike at Mike Ray says. Mike at raspberrybuy.org.
Andrew Conway says, and fine by me. JWP.
JWP. I was having problems. Agreed, Andrew. Too simple. How do we submit shows to the emergency queue? No link on the website. Yeah.
Ron says, I approve of these changes.
And we've got another HTML attachment from Dave Lee. And Dave says, I wholeheartedly support this and the use of a split infinitive.
What is the other one?
I think there must be a boldly go there or something. Or something like that. I didn't look, actually. I forgot to go and check. But yes, we don't care about grammar.
Well, one of us doesn't do. But I think everybody knows which one that is. Five shows into battling with English. DNT says, could it make sense to specify what it means to harm HPR? For example, in this case, that could be material that threatens HPR's hosting relationships, material that exposes HPR volunteers to legal liability. I think this covers the majority of issues that will come up. Is there anything else? DNT said.
Good comment. You said... Next is the next one. You can do your own there.
Mm-hmm. I would prefer to, in response to, would it make sense to specify what it means to harm HPR? I would prefer to, but specifying it as harm can cover any complaint. Have a listen to the first part of HPR 3615 or read the transcript. So the attack vector that will be used next and how will we deal with it? I have no idea, but how to deal with it will also not be easy. We'll have to cross a bridge when we come to it. So basically, we have to keep it vague.
Yep, good. And Carl Hammond says, oh, that's Lane Deer, yeah. I agree with keeping it generic to start, trying to indicate the intent rather than an enumerated list that could grow Byronically. Tentatively hopeful, Lane Deer.
I agree with the changes, says Brian in Ohio.
And Norris, that's Todd, says plus one, approve.
Jason Dodd, also, I approve.
Taj says, I approve of the changes.
Okay, so we're going to assume that that's a new policy. If anyone objects, respond, and we can discuss it the next show. And the next one. God, we're all about policies this month. HBR Reserve Queue by me. In today's shows, the janitor discusses how the erratic feast-famine nature of the queue can be helped by filling free slots from the main feed from a reserve queue. The current emergency queue will be renamed Reserve Queue if a free slot encounter is not filled in time, then the show will be used from the reserve queue. Shows will be taken from the reserve queue in a first-in, first-out basis. Hosts can either schedule a show for a particular slot or have their shows added to the reserve queue. Eventually, we will work on a dedicated upload option, but for now, the host can pick a random slot and just make a note in the show notes that the show is intended for the reserve queue. Thoughts? Well, yes, Ken. One thing springs to mind. Should you not first pick hosts who have not submitted shows recently? Gosh, Ken, that's a good point. I'll need to think about that. Anyone else? And that refers to episode 3616.
And we had a response from DNT who says, I like it, but I'm not clear on how this differs from the current program, other than the name change. Is it just a matter of automation? Maybe encouraging a shift in focus from the calendar to the reserve queue?
Yep, from me. Yep, that's about right. We'll be doing call for shows now based on how full the reserve queue is rather than free slots in the main queue. This is implementing something we talked about before, but we're now in a place where we can implement it. I'd like thoughts on how to signal that show can be put into the reserve queue.
Okay, and DNT says, I guess I would expect a paragraph following there are 21 days to wait, saying there are only 8 shows in the reserve queue. Submit a show into the reserve queue? That's a link or something? Yeah.
It's like a button then.
Yeah, followed by a brief explanation of what the reserve queue is. Then the rest of the page starting with the next 2 months section. One question is how many days prior to the air date will the show move from the reserve queue to the schedule? Would that be important too? Because in the nearly 2 years I've been listening, I think only one emergency show has reached the main feed. So if we're calling it a reserve queue and want it to rotate more often, we should pull from it sooner too. So then I would append something like, your show will air on the next slot that remains unfilled 7 days prior to air date. Or more vaguely, the reserve queue fills slots that are otherwise unclaimed. And then maybe we could display an average time to air for reserve queue shows once we can calculate one. Does this make sense? In general, I think it's a good idea. Frankly, it almost never matters exactly what date we pick when we post a show. Maybe reserving a date should rather be the exception than the rule. And the dynamic with picking dates would create the rather stressful janitorial situation of looking at the unfilled slots in the calendar.
Yeah. That is excellent. I'm going to be copying and pasting from that.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I just have a sort of deja vu reaction here, though, because we used to have shows sort of thrown at us, and then we would schedule them. How is this different? What's being suggested here? Put them all in the reserve queue and then throw them into slots as the need arrives. Sort of.
Yeah, the issue with before was that we would be the ones physically doing the scheduling, and it would be we had rules about if this then that we'll schedule whatever.
Yeah.
Now people are making the choice. I want to release on this day, or I want to release. I'm putting it into the reserve queue. And I think actually the simplest thing, answering my own comment from that email after a few days of thinking about it, the simplest thing is to first in, first out from that queue. So, yeah, this is a reserve show. It'll be marked as that. Please, we're low on shows. There was a free slot, and that will be added to the show. And then we can start using that queue, basically, if there are no people have not picked specifically reserved days, then it'll come from the reserve show. Not sure I'm answering the question. How is that different?
Well, it's maybe now's not the time to hash that out, but it does have the advantage that the reserve queue would rotate potentially faster than the emergency queue, because emergency queues have been in this state for a very long time. But think people have put stuff in there that they knew could sit unheard for a long time, although if you really want to hear them, you could do. That would be an advantage. But is it significant? Well, there are no other things getting in the way as there were back in the day when we had syndicated shows and things, except for the community news, which gets it. But that's not too much of a problem, I wonder.
Well, let's try it out, see how it goes. Let me see. CBart387 says, how much is this a manual process for the janitors? I had some thoughts about allowing people to choose the date for their show, and there would be a reserve. They would then trigger them be moved into an unfilled slot based on hash number of days from the current date. I wasn't sure, though, if more churn through the reserve would mean more work for the janitors, or if that could be automated. I don't want to take days. If somebody has picked something from the main queue, that's it. That's sacrosanct. You pick that date. So that's our contract. You pick that date, you get that date. Tough. If you wanted that date, you should have recorded your show earlier. If we put it into the reserve queue, we're saying that if there are free slots, then we'll start using them from the reserve queue. Now, good question, though, comes up. How many days ahead of time do we do that, Dave? Do we say, 7 days?
Yeah.
Because we usually don't let the free slots go, 24 hours in advance. So how fresh do we want HPR? That would mean all shows on HPR are at least 7 days old. Unless it's a reserve queue, reserve day. Yeah, well, is that a bad thing?
No, we need some time to... Because we haven't finished... A reserve show is not ready to go yet. It needs further work.
Yes.
Both at your end and also mine. To do the upload to the Internet Archive. So we need enough time to do those things.
Yeah.
And it's not just a case of time. It's a time that we have. It's not just, calendar time. Because, if we happen to be on holiday or something. Then
very much so, yes.
It could be an issue or, family matters, whatever. Go on.
Sorry, did I interrupt you?
No, you didn't. No. I was just muttering.
I'm thinking, let's say 7 days, because then that will give free slots. There will be a chance to process through the reserve queue. And for now, let us treat them as if they are... So I'm more talking about processing. This is a more you and me, Dave, conversation, and everybody else just happens to be walking past the corridor as we're discussing this. So they go into an upload show with a directory structure. Let's just move them from that directory structure into the emergency queue and put in placeholders for the date and episode number. And then we can run a sed script on it once we know the date and move them back into the upload directory, create a reservation for them, and run through the normal processing. Because from then on, there would be a normal show. Or I could modify my upload scripts that I would pull them in. I maybe modify the processing scripts that when they go back into the upload directory, that they're flagged as emergency ones, and therefore they don't need the database in order to process them.
although the new status stuff that we've added in recent months is quite useful for tracking, you know, who's still got stuff to do to get the show ready for release. So so you say not in the database, but I don't think you meant that. You meant keep enough stuff in the database to track the status of that show.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Anyway, perhaps move it back and just make a reservation ourselves manually for that slot. Modify the thing and then pump it back into the upload directory, and then it becomes a regular show and we can hit it with our regular new automated scripts. But I also need to put in some sort of a flag in there that it would trigger the text-to-speech, this is a reserve queue, because you've failed us for the last time.
Oh. yes.
Submit a show.
You would be applying the force. Yeah.
These are the shows you're looking for. Okay, I'm watching too much Star Wars lately. Anywho, we're now boring people to death with this. Let's go back to yet another... Oh, God, after years of nothing. I got called out, Dave.
Yep.
Yeah, back of the smoking rack, back of the bike rack. The bike shed. After school, bike shed. Popey called me out. Yeah. Saying that if our source code is not available on public, it ain't open source. Cruel but fair. Anyway, I contend it would be crueler to release the current code, so how do we proceed? I suggest we eliminate the problem by eliminating the code. My intention has always been massively multiplayer online mirroring service where anyone could get a complete instance of everything with a combination of Git and rsync. Anyone would have everything they need to host their own complete version of the site. You will still need to maintain the LAMP stack for the reservations, the processing workflow, but that code is a lot easier to sanitize and publish. So the site itself is made up of three parts: static pages like headers, footers, etc., how-tos, etc., dynamic pages that are driven from the database, and the media, audio, and video, etc. The media and show notes are already covered by Creative Commons license, and I suggest we should publish the code for the website under the AGGPL V3 or later and publish it to the GitT repo on repo.anonymoustoast.net. Thoughts?
So, Kevin O'Brien says, maybe if you release it, someone will clean it up. Seems like a good outcome. I've belonged to several organizations where we had a rule that if you complained about something an unpaid volunteer did, you were implicitly offering to take it over. It's quite a good strategy.
Yes. And I reply saying, or somebody could use the exploit to take advantage of the site and put other sites on the server at risk. The code is almost 17 euros old, and any effort to fix it would be massive and require a complete rewrite. Even if done, we would still leave a site that requires a database query to generate each page. This is not efficient, and it is costly in terms of hosting resources on our hosting platform. And commenting on several organizations, you implicitly are offering to take it over. I literally am the unpaid volunteer who volunteered to take it over and have been doing so for the last 10 years. So I'm complaining about it, and I'm also volunteering to write and maintain something better. This is not some precious piece of code that defines an age. It's a piece of duct-taped PHP that takes fields from a database and turns it into HTML. Fine for its time, but the world has moved on. Generating a static site from a database is ideal, as a static HTML page is very difficult to hack, and it means we could easily murder it to, for example, hackerpublicradio.ahuka.com. The fact that our content changes but once a day makes the approach for generating static pages ideal. With the raw SQL, anybody who wants to can help funnel their energy into generating a working site for us. The sooner we move off this lamp stick, the sooner we can stop using it, and the sooner there will be no problem releasing it for all to see. I don't know if I'm explaining this stuff correctly. So the idea is we have source code that generates our website. And it's never really been a priority because our priority is always getting shows. But it is freely been open source because, you know, it was written by Droops or somebody related to them and maintained by me since then. So, but it's not efficient code and it is expensive and not your Dockerized containers and modern stuff anymore. So the idea is that we would check in a database to Git or an SQL statement into Git, and you could generate the static website from that. But we'll continue on. It'll probably become obvious as the conversation continues.
So Klaatu says, in response to that, I think what you are saying is that HBR requires a full rewrite. I think what you're proposing is that we forget that the existing code exists because it's not worth saving, in quotes, and instead develop new open source code to replace it. If that's correct, then I agree. Let's not dwell on broken code that nobody loves, but move on forward with the new open source code that actually meets the site's requirements and ideally makes the admin's lives easier.
Thank you, Klaatu, for saying exactly what I should have said.
Klaatu's very good at cutting to the, yes. to the point of things. Yeah. He does have a way. So, yeah, good for him.
I apologise. I'm just so focused on this that, yeah, I didn't see the wood for the trees. Anyway, Kevin says, well, I'm not smart enough to do that, hence my lack of complaining. I'll just stay out of the way. Kevin.
That's very good. I like that.
Yes, got it in one, I say to Klaatu.
Yep.
Do you want to do Mike's?
Yes. It takes me a while to get the mouse across this page to click the link and blah, blah, blah. So Mike Ray says, I suggest that if something new is going to be developed, then it should be in Perl, using either Dancer or Modulicious as the framework. This I suggest since David's a Perl enthusiast and I'm currently professionally engaged in Perl development of a system comprised of both CGI and PSGI components.
Good to hear he's got...
He's
working. Yeah, that's great news.
Sounds like a good gig he's got there. It could even be containerized and then easily movable from host to host. Using a container with Nginx and UWSGI serving up the pages and another container with MySQL in it. However, whatever it is, it should not be PHP. And those pages should use templates so as to separate back-end from front-end design work. At a pinch, my second suggestion would be Python and either Django or Flask, but there is likely to be less of a legacy of Python skills in the current HBR staff, which is probably true.
I see what he's doing there.
He's my pal. Thanks, Mike. Don't take this to be me volunteering to give much time, as my time is currently oversubscribed, but this might reduce later in the year as some heavy research I'm engaged upon comes to an end. I will, of course, be hauling HBR over the coals if I A11Y. What is that? I can't read that. If I detect any sort of a problem. How many great shows could we get out of a complete rewrite of the whole enchilada? Oh, and keep the bleeding JavaScript to a minimum.
It means accessibility.
Yeah.
There will be no JavaScript on HBR, full stop. And yes, if it's not accessible, then it will not be. It's a bug.
Yep.
And I reply, we are publishing the data from a form of SQL DB and static HTML. And I'm very happy for there to be multiple ways to produce a web mirror. So database plus static pages redirects to some tech, which redirects to some working site on your domain. There are multiple approaches, then all the better. Anyone can start with a proof of concept for their tech for your of choice and record a show about it. Do you get what I'm asking or suggesting?
Oh, yeah, I think. I because the way my brain works, I go off into a sort of huddle inside my own head, looking at, well, how is that going to work? How is that? How will that fail? What's the problems there? And it's the thing that certain mindsets do, and they end up not getting anything done because they're worried about finding the holes in what they've been offered. And I have to be really careful that I don't let myself do that. I think the general idea of a database, and I contend a better database than we have now, because the design needs some thought, but we've discussed and agreed that in the past. You just need to do it, and some engine which can take that database and generate a static site on request, where that would be as efficient as possible, where it can detect what's changed and all that sort of good stuff, and only regenerate that. And then your static pages will sit there on the website being available. Yeah. It's not, I mean, it is going to be bigger than what we currently have in terms of the amount of file space used, but I wouldn't have thought a huge lot, given that the HTML that generates it now is sat in the database. So, you know, at least the what should we say, the core of the HTML, that there is a sort of process of putting it in a template, except it's not a real template at all, is it? But so that would be, that sounds good. It's the overheads of accessing it, again, presumably going to be pretty light, given that it's going to be split up by page. So you want to look at show XYZ, you have a URL that will get you there, or some query or other that through maybe a REST interface or something that will get you to the thing that you want, or a tag list that will get you there, or something of that sort. So that all sounds fine, yeah. I'm not sure about the Git side, but that's just because I'm not sure about the Git side.
Yeah, so on the Git, right, there will be the database, which is, so all the HTML file, template files and everything, in order to generate the site from the database, and the static sites for the header, the footer, and the links, and the how-to pages, and all that stuff. That's checked into Git. Right. I think we cover this later on, so shall we continue on? Anthony W. Denton says, I also agree with a complete new start. And Norris says, sorry, I missed this in the previous message, but where is the DB published? And Andrew Conway was saying, I was thinking along the same lines as Clap 2. Let's start fresh, build something long-term that's easy to understand and maintain. I'm happy to contribute, but I'm not the best developer here in these parts. And now, yeah, we get on to your one. Can you read your one?
I thought, I said, it might be a good idea if I shared my perspective on the way the HBR stuff is put together and managed. But I should have said at the moment. Anyway, that's a given. If there's anything I've misrepresented, I'm sure Ken will comment. So the database. This is not really up to the tasks it needs to perform. For example, there's a many-to-many relationship between shows and hosts. We've had many shows with multiple hosts, and it's highly desirable in my mind that we associate the participating hosts with their shows. We also want to include the Today with the Techie shows into the database. Also, when a show has what I call assets, photographs, extra documentation, script examples, we should associate these with the show. Finding all the components of a show for upload to archive.org is a pain when you have to parse the HTML notes looking for them. In addition, I'd like to structure things to reflect the relationship between tags and shows. There's more in that list, but I thought I'd stop at that point. On the website front, we have discussed making the site as static as we can. This would simplify the current dynamic component, as that you mentioned in your original email, a lot, and could make the site less vulnerable to attacks. We'd still need an interface for uploading shows and comments, but these would not be overly complex as far as I can see. The static site would probably be refreshed on a daily basis. We could use an existing static site generation system, though I have no experience of any at the moment. Janitorial duties. There would still be a lot of behind-the-scenes activities, at least in the beginning. I tend to process notes and assets for new shows so they generate clean HTML for the database. Ken does the preparation of the audio and posts the end result to the site and leaves the components for upload to archive.org. And I say, aka Internet Archive or IA. We tend to refer to it as the IA just because it gets simpler.
Because we're released.
Yeah. I gather up new shows and their various files and perform the IA upload as the need arises. These tasks have been streamlined over the years, and there are probably many ways of streamlining them further. I tend to perform curation tasks as well as the above, such as managing the project to add summaries and tags to shows, which is now completed. I'm currently ensuring all shows are on the IA with a range of properly tagged audio formats, that's with proper audio tags in them, and any assets that were missed in the time before, we decided to add them. I'm also looking at performing link checks on shows at the moment with a view to repairing the inevitable problems of link rot. Database rebuild. As far as this is concerned, I redesigned the current MySQL/MariaDB database a while ago, making a PostgreSQL replacement for testing. I wrote scripts to populate it from the live database, etc. It wasn't clear where we could run the final PostgreSQL database, however. I'm currently looking at replacing this database system with an SQLite version. I think this might be the format that would be shared in due course. Having, just as an aside to that email, I've done a bit of digging around, and SQLite is lovely for doing simple little databasery, but my Postgres thing is a bit more complex, not hugely complex, but a bit more complex than what SQLite can easily do. So we need to think very carefully about that.
Yes, and I would also remind you that remind everybody that HPR is a long-term project, so that there will be somebody's going to have to take over your work in the fullness of time. So don't make it too complicated. So this is something that really hit us in the foot with PHP. You've got to look at 17 years ago, what was the technology that was mainstream, and what's the technology going to be in 17 years' time? That's why I'm very concerned about using any cool whiz bang frameworks, any cool anything. Essentially, we need to keep everything as simple as possible. If there's complications that requires PostgreSQL, we got to wonder why we're doing that, and would we be better scripting that component some other way?
Yeah, good point. That's why I was looking at SQLite, of course. But
SQLite is a good, it's a suitable thing to do, because we can distribute the export as an SQL from SQLite. We can also distribute the binary into our media folders and just rsync it across, so that if somebody does a git sync, they'll get all the source files. If they do an rsync, then they'll get any changed files. So if the binary file for SQLite has changed, it will also come down, and then everything can be scriptable.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, okay. There's more discussion needed there, but we're well aware of that, and people are already saying this and lamenting this. So.
Anyway, I replied saying, well, I think an SQL export of an SQLite would be the source of truth. And then that gets checked into Git. Anyone can get the latest changes by using Git clone and then Git pull. So you do Git clone the first time, and then do a Git pull, and it'll pull down all the changes. And that would also include us, Dave. The DB you have been using has a better structure and could be used to maintain the live MySQL one on the HPR website for now. So let's start using your one as the source of truth and then pump the changes back to the HPR website. For now, an SQL dump from Postgres to Git is fine, and the SQ binary via rsync and not Git would follow later. So the structure is never going to be perfect, but publishing now as is will be a good start to get feedback from the database heads out there, or should I say, all caps, database heads, semicolon, wink. Anyway, one thing we need to change is the email address that the hosts are kept in the database. This needs to be converted from joblogs@example.com to joblogs.nospam@example.com, which is what we do when we publish to the RSS feed. So, and I give the note there. So that's something that we need to do with the current MySQL database, I think, which means we need to change some of the existing PHP sites so that we do the NoSQL. It just reads the already obfuscated email address from the database. Agreed or not?
Yep. One of my digressions is that the way that we are not authenticate, but identify people is by their email address at the moment. Although we did think of using GPG key and although GPG is outmoded open PGP maybe, but anyway, it's more or less the same, I think. But one thought, and I think that I did at my work, was to cater for multiple aliases per person. In other words,
yeah, that is one.
Email addresses per person, so that if they forgot and sent stuff in from one of their alternative mail addresses, you know, it's not uncommon to have multiple mail addresses, is it? Then we'd be perfectly happy in identifying that as well. You know, that was one of the design features that my replacement database hasn't got yet, but was going to have.
Okay, do you want to do Mike's?
Yep. So Mike says, Dave and all, please excuse top posting. He thinks I'm always complaining about this, which I probably am, but anyway. But I have an excuse, he says. Dave, I refer the honourable gentleman to the show I did about many-to-many relationships some years ago. In response to that nice Mr. Fallon's shocking approach to tags, Mr. Codd was spinning in his grave. He never misses that one. He did a fantastic show on many-to-many.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
And I did a more HBR-oriented one following up from that, in which I referred to his show multiple times. he wants to make sure I don't forget. And I don't, and I won't. And yeah, I get the message. Anyway, I would not call SQLite a database fit for heavy use. It's fine, very fine, in fact, as a single-user database, especially in embedded stuff. All of us probably carry at least one around in our pocket all day long. But for concurrent access by multiple web visitors, we really need a transactional database. PostgreSQL is, in my humble opinion, superior now to MySQL MariaDB. You might also consider MongoDB. Oh no, hang on, let's not let Ken Fallon loose on a database that does not need, not demand any structure to speak of. That way madness lies. I have used the Nicola static site generator extensively and can recommend it. P in LAMP used to stand for Perl and not PHP, and it still does in my world. Yeah, good.
Very good. I have thoughts on relational databases and on NoSQL databases, and it changes over time. No, but that's not the subject of this.
It's wonderful. No, it's a wonderful thing. But if you want to do relational queries, then it's a bugger. That's
yeah, it's not also that wonderful. You it's basically like a brain dump. Anyway, that's we'll continue on with this. Okay, so I'm replying to Mike where he says, but for concurrent access by multiple web visitors, it really needs a transactional database. So I say there will no longer be multiple visitors accessing the database, as only one person will ever be accessing it. More correctly, them, not accessing it, a single instance of the database. There will only be one person accessing people's individual copy of the database at a given time. When it changed, so I'm trying to explain, so static, the site that's been served that you will go to hackerpublicradio.org org, for instance, in the fullness of time. You will go there. Every single page has been read from disk. There is nothing coming from the database. So that is the plan. Comments and upload aside, but the plan is everything is coming from disk. So if you can serve it from the Hacker Public Radio website from disk by putting Apache or Nginx or some other web server in front of it, then all those static files can also be taken and served by you at home. Think about it. So I'll go through the steps. Say a change occurs. For example, somebody is posting a show. So Dave posts a show. Somebody posts a show. Mike posts a show, right? And then Dave here goes and checks the SQL out of Git, right? So at the very start of your processing the multimedia, Dave, you check the SQL out of Git. And you build the database based on what's in Git. Yeah, are you okay with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Then you run all your normal processing that you do based on the database that's running on your local machine. When you're finished, you do an SQL export to a file, and then you send that SQL file back into Git. Simple enough. You check out, you do something, yes. You check back in.
But what if while you're doing that, somebody has written a comment?
Yeah, it's a different part of the database. We're talking about somebody's posted a show. Don't complicate things, Dave. We're talking about posting shows. Yeah.
So the show is distinctly different from the comments.
Yeah, we're not doing anything about comments yet. Yeah, we're just talking about shows. We're talking about getting the majority of HPR's bread and butter. I'm getting feedback from you there. Can you...
I'm sorry.
Okay, our bread and butter is the shows. So we're going to focus on that. And then the comments and the posting and all the rest of that stuff we can do later. It's not that difficult, actually. Because that code was written by me, and it's at least it's not 17 years old, it's maximum 10 years old. Okay, so you already know that you're going to be working on one part of the website, which is posting a show, because we're keeping tag of the database. So you check out something, you do your bit, and you check it back in. It can never conflict with anything that I'm doing, because I'm working on a different part of the database, correct? Okay, so when you submit your changes, Git produces an RSS feed. So that RSS feed will be read by me, and then I know to check out the SQL out of Git. I import that into my database of choice. Again, single user mode running on a local machine, or I could have it in an AWS, blah, it doesn't really matter. I'm running on a dev site on it locally, yeah? Then I run my scripts to generate the static site from that, right? And that produces, we no longer have an SQL file. We then have HTML files that are all linked together relatively. So index.html links to shows. And in that shows directory, there's a whole go of subdirectories. And in HPR 1234, there's an index.html file. And in there, that includes the header and footer from the template file. It includes the show notes that were in the database. It includes links to the media that were in the database. Get me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Static site. So it's a static site. We can then rsync the files, as well as sending them to www.hackerpublicradio.org. We can also send them to the rsync site, like rsync.hackerpublicradio.org. Yeah? And then we can update a notification RSS feed, yeah. So anybody else with a Pi running Nginx, so simple as you're sitting with a fiber connection at home and you got 50 megabits per second, you put a Raspberry Pi on there, you install Nginx, and you have a cron job that runs every hour and it does rsync-av-partial-progress anonymous@rsync.hackerpublicradio.org:. And then /var/w/html. And that will update all the static pages that we've just generated. And you're now hosting them on your local web server at home. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That was a very unbelieving. Mm-hmm.
Well, you set my brain into, well, how will that work? And why would we expect that to be blah, blah, blah? I'm just trying to resolve what you are, the design that you are sketching out.
Good.
Against what I know, trying to disengage my database head, as it were, and where a database is meant to be a real-time representation of what's changing.
Yes, it is.
Something where we're not... We're also offering an interface over Git, which is about tracking changes as well, except that there is potentially a delay between a change being made and somebody else getting it, and all that sort of stuff, which you've covered. So yeah, it's...
Okay, the Git, yeah. The Git is the factory, right? The database... Uh-huh. The Git is the factory. The database is located in the factory. Yeah. And what we produce is a bunch of static HTML files that links to the Internet Archive. And every day we will go out and we will change one of those HTML files. And we'll add a new show and we'll link to a new website. And we'll modify the queue, perhaps. So every day a few files will change.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're publishing those to as static files, there's no reason why somebody else can't take all of those files and serve them from a different location. They're a finished product. They're a website in a box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're a snapshot in time, which
Correct.
Is... That's a important... concept, at least for me, to get, because they are not, well, similarly with the whole static site idea, it's a snapshot, isn't it? And the next snapshot will apply any additions and deletions or whatever has have gone on in the interim, and that's fine.
Yes. Now, remember, folks, HPR is not anybody who's left after this period of time. HPR is not a auction site. We are not a hospital online thingy, patient services. We're not critical infrastructure. We update our website once a day, at least once a day, at most maybe 5 times a day. Yeah, it is not. And if, for example, my copy of the web server is 30 minutes later than yours, does it really matter? It'll sort itself out in a while. Chill, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just getting my head around that. I tell
exactly.
You, with the updates I'm currently doing to the IA stuff, I was surprised to update a show recently, and all of a sudden there was an editor's note on it on the IA. And that was because the editor's note had been added to the main database, but it hadn't made its way through to the Internet Archive version. And, so that's a sort of... picture the sort of things that you would see. Now, hopefully it wouldn't be as long a delay between the one and the other, but because it's all being propagated out through existing mechanisms around Git and whatever. So
yeah,
gotcha.
So I can understand that this is a novel approach from the point of view of having a database in Git. This is probably the first use case where that was ever a thing. Because, as you say, how are we going to merge changes and conflicts? And the point is, we don't worry about it. We make sure that only one of us is ever working on the Git on the database at any given time. And that's easy to do because it's you and me, Dave. And we're now also going to the reservations table, and we process shows based on a state of the show. So I do not process any shows until they're in metadata. What's that metadata thingy?
I can never. I've written scripts to handle it, but it's not no
exactly.
longer in my
so
brain.
Once the metadata is ready, you put a flag on it, and then you don't touch that show until the show is posted. And then once the show is posted, then the media can be transcoded. And once you see media transcoded, you send it off to the Internet Archive. So in the same way, the SQL... shouldn't be that big a problem because we will be changing different parts of that file at different different lines of that file, so there should never be a conflict. It is possible that there will be changes made by you and changes made by me, but they shouldn't give a merge conflict. Shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. What about... Yes. Here's one my naughty bad brain just came up with. What about if user X with his own copy of HBR says, oh, I've got my own copy here. Ah, I could add a comment to it, couldn't I? And then by some magic or other, it will get back to the main HBR, won't it? And the answer is,
yeah, but when we're doing the templating, we'll be referring the commenting system back to the HackerPub radio website.
We're not going to send out the janitorial mops and buckets for everybody to have.
No.
But the question is likely to arrive. Well, why can't I send my comments by, you know, doing stuff?
No, you're overthinking it, Dave. We're focusing on getting shows in. The comments will go back to the HBR website. Once we can get rid of all the other crap, we can release that code as well.
I wasn't suggesting that we did it, though, merely that is a train of thought that somebody might have.
Yeah, but they have. If they put a web engine in front of their website and they click on a comment, it'll redirect to https://hackerpublicradio.org/comment.php, and then you're making a change to the actual database, so you're going over to there, and a comment gets posted, and then it comes through the commenting system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and maybe that is something that we will send out later on. But then the requirement is to be running PHP on your web server. So I'm not sure we're there yet. Let's get the code for the majority of the website out. Then we deal with the comments. Then we deal with posting the show.
Well, it's important to maybe say that we're not building a multi-master HPR system here.
No.
Single master we don't use master slave anymore, do we? But single system with subsidiaries or something.
Yeah, so there'll be a source of truth, okay? And that source of truth will be maintained in Git, yeah? So we will use the Git system, which is a quite a good system for determining who has the authority to check in, check out, and approve and whatever. So we'll use Git as git or git.anonesthost.com, which is our hosting provider, thanks Josh, as the source of truth. Now, to go on to the second part of my email, if you decide to run your own deployment, you're free to look at the RSS feed on the Git site for a new commit, check out the SQL file out of Git, import it into a Postgres database of your own, run Nokia build, write out static pages to disk or sync them to your own web server's root directory, and a web server then can serve pages to hackerpublicradio.org/raspberryvi.org, which is Mike's website. Eventually, we will maintain a mirrors.txt file, which will allow us to use round-robin requests so that when a visitor comes to DNS, the requests can be round-robined to hackerpublicradio.org, hackerpublicradio.kenfallon.com, hackerpublicradio.raspberryvi.org, and hpr.myprovider.example.com, as they all will be serving the latest static files. You can only do this exactly because HPR changes, for the most part, happen once a day. So there's nothing to stop Mike downloading everybody. Downloading everything to run HPR. And then, for example, if an honest host is being DDoSed, then we can switch. We can all agree on on the email list, or we can all agree on Matrix. Okay, that site is down, and we now, Dave's website is the source of truth. So Dave has the code now at git.perloid.org, and that's, we point all our scripts over there for generating the website. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So what the source of truth is what we say the source of truth is based in Git. Couldn't be simpler, Dave. Unfortunately, my ability to explain it to people is very hard. The static sites
available in rsync, just throw a web server in front of it and you can serve out HBR. If, on the other hand, you want to get involved in all the coding and all the scripting, you check the stuff out of Git. So everything's available to you via Git, via rsync, or on archive.org.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you want to do DNT's one?
So DNT says, though it's been a while since I used Jekyll, and longer since WordPress, I should be able to contribute to migrating the existing page templates to another type of template. My understanding of SQL is very minimal, so if I had the choice, each show would be a .md file with the metadata in YAML at the top of the file. Host pages the same way. Is there some reason a proper database just for storage would really be better? In any case, I'd like to be in the loop. Should some sort of website working group be created to have these discussions without filling up this mailing list? Okay.
And some reason the proper database storage would be better. Yeah. And I reply, yes, to build and maintain relationships between the hosts and series to the show, that's basically why we use a database. The full RSS feed already contains everything that a database would provide, but a database makes it a lot easier to maintain. Now, I was of the opinion once, Dave, that the RSS was enough, that we've had this religious discussion, you and I, and you have convinced me over time that a light database has advantages for the purpose of being able to generate the website, because it's easier to loop through than having static pages, static MD files.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what relational databases do.
Yeah, but we really need to be careful about how far we go with that, because we don't want to make it too complex.
Well, I found with my... I've got a database here which is mirroring the HBR stuff, or the aspect of the HBR stuff that we don't cater for in the main database, which is what assets, as I call them, files and auxiliary files are associated with the show. And it also keeps the record of what the status is in relation to uploads to the Internet Archive. So that ended up being relatively complex, because I've got the episodes, I've got the assets, I've got various other things in there. And I ended up doing all sorts of complex relational things where you needed to write selects with lots of joins and stuff. All of these are represented, all of the common queries are represented as views. So you can hide all the complexity relatively easy. And this is SQLite, you know, so...
Yeah, but there's the problem, because you're going, we can hide all this stuff. And then it's passed over to me, and I'm having to go, what the hell is Dave doing here? Hi, Dave.
No,
4 o'clock in the morning. Sorry to interrupt you, your holiday, but where is this coming from?
If you're writing a bit of code that says, give me all the stuff relating to shows and the files that are associated with them, whether they're on the Internet Archive or not, you don't query the tables, you query the view.
Yeah, and now I want to make a change in the database because something, and it breaks one of your views, and then it breaks my workflow. So
it can't be broken, because if you design the database right, you will not allow values to go in there which will cause breakage. I mean, I'm that person design it that way.
Yeah. Something else will happen, right? Where there's something else that we are legally required to do for blah, or we need to change the Creative Commons, a new version of the Creative Commons, or there's something else that we need to add to the database. Now I need to change the view, so I do need to understand it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The view is just a query. The view is just a query that saves you having to type all that crap every time you want to make the query.
Yeah.
Just call the view. You can also do materialized views, which let you change things via the view. And you can do that in SQLite, I've discovered recently. So, you know.
You are overestimating my ability to do stuff, Dave.
Yeah. I'll leave you instructions in my will, okay?
Thanks. Oh, God. Anyway, yes, fine, a little bit, but not too much, yeah.
Yeah, I get you.
I also do want to look at that file asset thing. Is there another way that we can do it sanely that might be more processing power but would be easier to understand? Because now we're sharing the stuff and we both don't have like 10-year... The people who will be checking out a gate, we want contributions. We don't want them to have this 10 years of experience that we have in the janitor's closet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we have various people who are coming forward offering to give some help, some of whom have database experience. So hopefully the sort of common view that comes from such a source will be such that it is not baroque and bizarre. I was accused when I retired of writing baroque code that nobody else could understand. I used to get phone calls saying, Dave, what the hell is this meant to do? Why you do it that way? And so, yeah, so somebody to unbaroque my crap would be good.
Okay, and about moving the discussion off to the mail list, let's move it out somewhere. I don't know. We have a Matrix channel. Mm-hmm. But I actually, we'll see. Is it possible to get a MySQL dump of the current database? Yes, I think that should be possible. Let us do that after we change the email address thing. The only thing now that concerns me is our upload site does check the email address. So it might be non-trivial, but we will do it.
You just encrypt it, eh?
Or we could just publish it without the email addresses for now.
Yes, copy out. That was Todd's message, by the way. I don't think he said.
Should you do Chris's? Yeah.
Just before going on, Rowan has asked if he can see a schema of the current database, because he's sort of thinking around a homebrew sort of static site generator. So handing somebody the schema is no big deal at all. In fact, we still got the old comments in there, by the way, so we probably just
delete
them now. That was just there as belt and braces. So but the answer is absolutely yes, and we can probably just put it somewhere on the site if we think that's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And a schema for the your one as well.
Yeah. Yes, my Postgres one is still in a state of flux, but hopefully I can put that to the people who are going to be involved and say, look, what do you think of that? And they'll say, it's rubbish.
Brilliant, Dave, you're a genius. Sufficiently complex, but still any moron could understand it.
Yeah, written by any moron. So, do you want me to read Chris's thing? So he says, this is Chris Zimmerman, who's monochromic@gmail.com, and he says, I concur with Ken, the rewrite is probably the easiest solution if the current is too shocking for the wider audience to view. Smiley face. The in-laws did a whole show on Git-controlled static site generators a while ago. Series 1, Episode 51, HBR 3549. A concept that's been successfully deployed in quite a few projects over the years I was involved. The webpage of the local log I support. I don't think there was a comma missing there. But the webpage of the local log I support probably being the most recent example. And it gives a site name. For the following main reasons. It scales extremely well. Based on a versioning control system which is aimed at planet-wide massive collaboration, i.e. the Linux kernel, this is suitable from a few collaborators right up to the thousands if HPR can attract this amount of developers. Smiley face. That's a thought. The generation of the HTML content is blindingly fast. Depending on the technology and the size of the site, the lug uses a Golang-based generator called Hugo. Website generation from a set of markup files typically only takes a few seconds. generating the lug with a total of 50 pages clocks in at around 2 seconds on an old Skylake i7 with 16 gigabytes of main memory and 512 gigabytes of SSD running jammy, a ballpark figure, whatever that is. Seamless integration in the Git workflow using mechanisms, I think you mean, like webhooks or similar, a new version of the site is generated on the fly once a new version has been committed to the Git repo of the site. Website performance is awesome, as this is static HTML with JavaScript and friends kept to a minimum. Content delivery is only limited by network performance and local, i.e. client-side rendering performance. As I'm sure I'm not the only host using some background magic for automatic uploads of episodes as part of the podcast production workflow, which is a pain due to potential changes in the upload page structure, etc., which can easily break the workflow. Who would have thought it? I volunteer for the API design / implementation. Ken and myself discussed this some years back, and some initial design should be on the HPO GitLab instance. Ken, this instance / server seems to be offline. Do you have access to the document I'm referring to? While I dig this up, would it make sense to establish a quorum / working group of volunteers dedicated to the creation of a new HBR website via this mailing list? We can then take this offline and discuss design and implementation, including work allocation, timelines, etc., via a separate mailing list or other means. Cheers, Chris.
And again, I would remind people that if you're contributing to HPR, we require a commitment of 2 years that you're associated with the project. And the reason for that is that if you decide to quit, that we have time in order to learn and take over what it was that you developed. So if you're helping out, yes, things can come up, but we do expect a long-term commitment from you for this task. Okay, was there anything else, Dave? This has been a monumentally huge show. I'm thinking of splitting it up.
Rowan did say, make some comment on Matrix to the effect that he was suggesting something in order to make sure the community news didn't end up as 5 hours long. I think he had some sort of premonition there.
So yeah.
Just 2 hours, according to me. But I've left my recorder running when you didn't. Okay. So yeah, there's only one other thing, that is to say we're making some progress uploading older shows to the archive, archive.org, and there's numbers in the notes in case you're interested. But anyway, I managed to do 160 of them in the past month, so gradually we're chugging through them. So yeah, and when that's done, that'll mean we've got a good snapshot of the live system for perpetuity, whatever.
Yeah. Awesome. And what we want then is everybody to be rsyncing it down so that they have a copy of everything as well.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough of that. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker
Public
Radio.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.